to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. The time of walking through vendors' booths, at powwows, and art fairs appears to be re-emerging. But the past year has taken a toll on Native vendors and arts and crafts merchants. From fry bread stands to jewelry makers, there's a lot of anxiety about recovering from the economic loss of COVID-19. Will pent-up demand mean a fast start when sales resume? We'll check in with some Native vendors right after National Native News. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native groups are applauding CNN's termination of its contract with senior political commentator Rick Santorum. Native groups, including the National Congress of American Indians, Indian Collective, Native Organizers Alliance, and Illuminative, called for Santorum's removal after comments he made about Native Americans. Last month, a video surfaced of Santorum speaking at a conservative youth event where he said, "We birthed a nation from nothing," and went on to say, "There isn't much Native American culture in American culture." Native groups called the comments racist, whitewashing history, and attempts to erase Native peoples. National Congress of American Indians President Fawn Sharp, in a statement Sunday, said she was thrilled about the firing. She emphasized partnerships with tribes to address portrayals of Indigenous people. Judith LeBlanc, director of the Native Organizers Alliance, in a statement said the firing is a start, but called on CNN to do more and hire Native people to cover Indian country issues. The Eastern Shoshone General Council on the Wind River Reservation in Wyoming recently held a special meeting regarding medical marijuana. As Wyoming Public Radio's Signa McAdams reports, the council voted to move the conversation forward on the cultivation, extraction, and retail sale of cannabis.
Enrolled Eastern Shoshone member Bobby Shongetsi proposed the idea and says legalizing marijuana will help the tribe see greater economic growth just when it needs it most.
And this all helps with economic development to bring revenue into all these programs that can help benefit and get our people healthy again.
The required 75-member quorum was lost in the mid-afternoon before voting on decriminalization. But the Eastern Shoshone General Council was able to pass 13 resolutions, including several outlining the foundation for a cannabis commission. Shongetsi says it's important to keep moving forward.
With the fast-moving cannabis industry, we need to have General Council as often as possible.
Another Eastern Shoshone General Council meeting is scheduled for July 24th to consider decriminalization. For National Native News, I'm Signa McAdams on the Wind River Reservation in Wyoming.
The Gila River Indian Community in Arizona is offering nonprofits a COVID-19 vaccine incentive. Under the program, nonprofit organizations in the community can receive $100 per shot for hosting COVID-19 vaccination events. The tribe will provide its mobile vaccination unit and healthcare staff. Gila River Indian Community Governor Stephen Ra Lewis announced the incentive program over the weekend in a video message to community members.
This mobile vaccination unit will bring the vaccine to you locally, to your subdivision, your business, your church, wherever our members are.
Lewis hopes the incentive program will encourage people to get the vaccine.
We can do good for ourselves, our families, and the community by getting vaccinated, and we can make a difference now. I hope this persuades those of you who were on the fence until now or thought getting the shot wasn't convenient to take advantage of our mobile vaccination unit program. If you can't come to the shots, we'll bring them to you.
The tribe's offering an additional incentive to nonprofits. When the community reaches 50% of fully vaccinated members living on the reservation, nonprofits with the highest vaccinations from first through third will receive $25,000, $15,000, and $10,000. As of Saturday, the Gila River Indian community had a vaccination rate of 41%. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shirhwitdui. A Native event is not complete without arts and crafts booths and food vendors. There are the small entrepreneurs who we're talking about today, and they often make things like jewelry, hand-sewn accessories, and baked goods. And during the near-complete shutdown of tourism, fairs, and powwows during much of the COVID-19 pandemic, many of these vendors had to change business tactics or close up shop entirely. Loans, grants, and relief aid from governments have offset some of the losses. Now that the falling COVID-19 infection rates are putting events and tourism back on the calendar, things could be looking up for Native vendors and their customers. In this hour, we'll talk with a couple of Native vendors about how the pandemic affected them. And if you are a small arts and crafts or food vendor, you're welcome to join our conversation. And what kind of business or financial support did you find during the pandemic? And how were you affected by the pandemic? The number to reach us is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Maybe you're also excited for flea markets and other events to begin again. Share your story with us by calling in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And today we're going to start off in Shiprock, New Mexico. With us on the line is Thomas Brady. He is an arts and crafts vendor, and he is Navajo. Our pleasure to have him here with us. Thomas, welcome to Native America Calling.
Good morning, and thank you.
Well, Thomas, thank you for reaching out. And Thomas, I've been thinking about you. I remember when you reached out to us to let us know there's other people who have been affected by the pandemic, and you wrote to us and you shared your story. And so I wanted to take it further and share your story with our listening audience about some of the things that you've had to endure because of the pandemic, and specifically how it affected what you sell. Tell me more, Thomas.
Well, I personally make, I crochet, hair ties with a Navajo basket design on it. I do round hair ties and butterflies, and I do the traditional hair wrap also. And with the pandemic, when it started, everything shut down. I mean, flea markets, in the markets, everything, and we were told that we can't sell even on the side of the trading post, or else we're going to get it ticketed. So I had to stop everything, and I had no, and this is the only income I get to pay my bills and everything. And it just got so hard that I started relying on my brother, who paid my utility bills and my car insurance and bought gas for me. And in return, I looked after him, cooked for him, did all that stuff, and I didn't know that was gonna happen. Was he passed away and all that stopped, and this pandemic made me feel so bad to where I didn't know what to do, where to turn, how to do anything. I even went and talked to the Navajo Nation's government. They said, well, there's no money for anything like that to help you. You need to go to social services and see what they can do. And I talked to them, and they told me, oh, you're not, you don't qualify for general assistance because you were on it several years ago. You need to go to Social Security office and apply for SSI. And they said no, too. So I said, I'm just doing what I'm told to do. So then I went and wrote to Arizona State Governor, and a lady from that office called me, and she, as I quote, said to me, I am just calling to let you know that the state of Arizona, it is illegal for us to help anybody that's a member of the Navajo Nation, and that was it.
And Thomas, so, what I want to pause there because I'm curious about that. What did that mean? And did you ask questions what that meant? Did they state a law or what was that about?
I think it's some kind of a law that is in place that they had made with the Navajo Nation and the state made together. And so the state can help anybody that's a member of the Navajo Nation and something to, I don't quite really understand what they were talking about, something that happened a long time ago, and that's the law that was passed.
I don't know about this. First, I'm hearing of it, and maybe there's somebody out there who can explain a little bit about this. Maybe you work for the state, you have some thoughts. But nonetheless, being told something like this, Thomas, how did that affect you?
I felt like I don't matter. It's like nobody cares about us. I mean, I thought I was the only one going through this until I started talking with other people, and they were like, oh, I went through the same thing, and they're the small vendors like myself. And we all started asking what we can do for each other, and we found out that people were selling in an empty lot in Shiprock by the grocery store, and that's where we kind of get together and put out what we make, and there's like a few food vendors and people that collected a lot of movies. They're selling their stuff until they can get back and start buying supplies for what they can make.
And so, Thomas, you heard one of our programs and felt, you know what, there isn't a place for me. There are some of these things, but it doesn't apply to some small vendors. And Thomas, with all that said, what has been missing in terms of relief to people who have been impacted by COVID-19? What should have been done in your thought?
That there should have been a little bit more support for people like myself that are small arts and crafts vendors. I mean, there's nothing out there for us. There's nobody we can go and ask if there's something that can be done to help us, support us a little bit until the tourism and everything starts opening up again. Like until, I didn't find out until Saturday morning that the level of it was orange, so where nothing was open, and we were told it went to yellow, and that the flea markets are going to be opening back up starting this week is what we were told. So we're fingers crossed sitting here right now. There's like six of us in Shiprock set up to sell. With fingers crossing, we're praying that it's true that they're opening back up, and we need, I mean, most of us don't, I know a lot have, they've been lucky to have a lot of family support, and they have like cows that they've been selling and other things that they can sell to make the money. But a lot of us don't have none of that stuff. And this is what we've been supporting ourselves with. And it's gotten so hard. I mean, I even wrote to the Secretary of Interior, Deb Holland, saying, I am so desperate. I need help. I need some suggestions, some advice, something. Who do I talk to? Where do I go? And I never heard nothing from that. I've written to senators, congressmen, congresswomen. I even went and wrote to the President of the United States And all I got was a form letter that was similar to the one I got several years ago saying you need to go back to your tribe and they'll help you.
And so, Thomas, we got to go to break here, but just hearing your story, I know there are many people who can relate to it. And through all of this, has there been this much of I guess, kind of your main income cut out because it was interacting with people, interacting with places that attract tourism and wondering how have you gotten by? What kind of adjustments did you have to make? And now that more places are starting to open up, does this mean more opportunity? You can share your story with us. Thomas, we really appreciate you being here and sharing your story too. And coming up after the break, we're going to check in with another person, a small business person up in Canada, as well as others who work in business administration to talk a little bit about some of the things they're doing. And of course, if you have questions, go ahead and call in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls. And we know a lot of this also applies to people who do food vending. Maybe you made a lot of income by delivering those breakfast burritos to tribal offices. What kind of impact did it have on you? You can share some thoughts. All people are welcome. We also mentioned food vendors at different powwows and arts and craft fairs. How has this affected you? Today, this is our focus on what's going on with small entrepreneurs. Give us a ring. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And if you need to call in anonymously, we'll still take your call. You can dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And after hearing Thomas's story, maybe you have some resources you'd like to share with him directly. Go ahead and call in. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And knowing that the pandemic has hit people in different ways, especially people who sell different things, maybe you have taken a special initiative to help some of these people out. You can give us a ring too. You can share what you've done. Give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. Or if this is the story of somebody in your family and you relate and you also want to share some thoughts, go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if you are listening to this program in our archive, you can continue to also share your thoughts on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. MazaCoin and NativeCoin are names of two cryptocurrencies created by Native Americans. They're a part of a growing investment idea that involves trading virtual currency online. On the next Native America Calling, we'll hear from experts that believe cryptocurrency is another way for tribes to exercise their sovereignty.
Support by Western Governors University, an online university for working adults and underserved populations. At WGU, students apply what they already know, learn at their own pace, and graduate sooner, with little or no debt. With bachelor's and master's degree programs in four fields, business, IT, teaching, and health professions, including nursing. Information and application at wgu.edu/degrees.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are focused on Native vendors today. 2020 was a tough year for small businesses that rely on face-to-face sales and events like powwows, markets, fairs. And is this how you make a living or supplement your income? What has been the impact? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. With us on the line from Shiprock, New Mexico, is Thomas Brady, and he is an arts and crafts vendor, and he is Navajo. Our pleasure to have him here. And Thomas, if people did want to connect with you or find where you're going to be next, where do they find you?
Well, I post a little bit of information where I'm going to be, like Facebook, saying I'm going to be at that empty lot where a few people sell in Shiprock, what days I'm going to be there, depending on if I can make the stuff or get the supplies I need to make more stuff. Like Wednesday, we were actually informed that the Kayenta flea market is opening back up, and a lady said that she wants me to join her, and we're going to go out there and set up and see what happens out there, because she's in the same boat as I am.
And Thomas, where on Facebook do people find you?
My Facebook is Kiani Taba.
Okay, thank you for that, Thomas. And, you know, I'd like to turn to a voice coming to us out of Farmington, New Mexico. We have Dr. Franklin Sage. He is a director for the Diné Policy Institute, and he is Diné. Our pleasure to have him here with us today. Dr. Sage, welcome to Native America Calling, and I know you go by Frank. So, Frank, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And, Frank, just hearing Thomas's story, any words for him?
It is pretty much disheartening to hear what Thomas is going through, what he has experienced trying to get extra help. I think there's a lot of people on the reservation are going through the same hardship like Thomas did. And especially when the flea market closes, there's actually 13 flea markets that across the reservations that are pretty well known on the Navajo Nation. So I think things are looking up lately. Some things are opening up, and people are being creative in how to sell their crafts and how to keep their business going. I think right now, you know, we just need to encourage Thomas and people like him are going struggling through. And they're going to come out better. As soon as the Navajo Nation flea market starts opening up again, I think a lot of vendors, jewelry makers, producers, they will be out again. So.
And Frank, talk a little bit more about the different flea markets, because they're kind of different than the ones you might find in other places, of just how it is really an economic source and a go-to place to get items. And before the pandemic, people knew you could go to the flea market and get this and that. Tell me about more about that and just really what it is we're talking about.
Okay. The Net Policy Institute, we did a research back in the summer of 2018. We had the help of 10 Navajo interns that helped us collect data. So we visit all the major flea markets across the reservation from Tuba City all the way to Gallup, Shiprock, Tuba City, Kayenta, Winder Rock, Chinle, Delcon, Yajahe, Saley, Sheep Springs, Lachit, Crown Point, and Scription House. So there we sample the producers. The producers are the one that's actually selling stuff. Whatever their craft is, and then we have the participant, the consumers, the people that go there to buy supplies, to buy, you know, different things, food. And as we were interviewing the producers, we found out that on a good day, a lot of them make a profit of $47 to $300, and some of the producers, this is like their main source of income. So they range from 13,000 to 27,000, just flea market every weekend, flea market when it's offered. And then also, so one of the things is that a lot of them, the arts and crafts, the food vendors, and people that sell at the flea market, especially on the Navajo Nation, it's pretty much a huge informal economy that a lot of times the tribal government kind of overlooks because it, to them it just seems like it's not really important. But if we just heard from what Thomas's experience and how he's making it his main income, and those people really need support. And some of the things that they're lacking on these flea markets is the infrastructures of like shade and buildings. and also like bathrooms and stuff like that, and security. And so they can have a safe space to sell their crafts, their food, their supplies. And then majority of them, they often go from flea market to flea market to try and sell more of their products.
And so, Frank, a lot of lessons learned because of this pandemic. And so when we look at this, any thoughts or any discussions within the Navajo Nation, within the government, of thinking about, okay, we need to do something to provide relief? Because as we're hearing from Thomas, he didn't find any. And then, of course, what he was told when he reached out to the state. I don't know if you have any thoughts as to what possibly he was being told or what they were referring to. Go ahead, your thoughts. Go ahead, Frank.
I think as far as the Navajo Nation government is concerned, for the informal economy, is it's not really a priority. Currently, I think that having their meetings based on how to spend the supplement, you know, financial aid they got from the federal government. Within those, informal economy is not mentioned. So there needs to be more advocates from the Navajo Council delegates for their people, their community members, and providing financial aid for people that are like Thomas's. And they need help like today, yesterday. And these officials, elected officials, really need to look more into not just certain areas of the businesses, but actually, you know, go include everybody, especially the people that have vendors, food vendors, and when they buy their jewelries or sell their jewelries. Because once the Navajo Nation issues shelters in place, the whole Navajo Nation government, especially they would call them chapter houses, they were basically just closed. They just closed the door and went home. And prior to the pandemic and prior to last year, a lot of Navajo would look up to these chapter houses because that was the main hub to ask for help or assistance or some kind of assistance when the national disasters happened. They had snow removal, fixed the roads, and hauling wood, and sometimes they haul water for the people. But once the shelter-in-place happened, all that just shut down. So if you looked at it from the Native perspective and go a little deeper, the Western way pretty much shut down. That includes the government. That includes the schools. That also includes a lot of different tribal government, because the Navajo Nation, their government is pretty much modeled off the United States government, and it's supposed to be a temporary government, but it just got adopted into what is now normal operation. So I think as far as that is new to me, as far as what he was, you know, what they were told, that if they're Navajo Nation, they can't get any help or assistance. It's almost seemed very unethical to me to be turned away, especially from the state, their own citizens, just because they're tribally enrolled in Navajo Nation. So I think we probably have to look a little deeper more, you know, try and find out if what those people are saying is true or not. And then if it is not true, then they need to be held accountable, because they're turning away people just because they're Navajo or certain tribal members. And I think that's totally wrong.
And Frank, if there are more people who heard things like this, where should they go? Who should they tell?
If you are a Navajo member, I would first suggest you individually going to your council delegates, whoever your council delegate is. There's 24 council delegates across Navajo Nation. Try and approach that. Or go to your nearest chapter house and try and get some help through there. Or, you know, you can just give me a call at my office and I'll see what I can do to help.
Okay.
And my number is area code 928-724-6943. And I am actually, I work at Dinette College, Taylor, Arizona.
All right. Thank you for that. And you know what? I got some calls coming in. Again, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is a number. What about in your own tribal nation? How does this conversation relate? Is it parallel? Give us a ring. We know there are different opportunities that people take on. I think of the Pueblos selling bread. Bread makers, where you at? What has been the case? 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And what is it in your community? And how have some of these small vendors been affected? 1-800-996-2848. We're going to say hi to Melvin, who's in Santee, Nebraska, tuned in on KZYK. Melvin, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Well, good morning.
Good day.
You know, this, last year when all the powwows got canceled, all the different events, that really affected a lot of our old business people who made quilts for, because during the powwow seasons, a friend of mine, he was doing 4 giveaways at one powwow. And I said, well, what's that add up to? He said, about 50 blankets me and the family were working on. And that all got canceled. And, you know, that really affected their income because, you know, it was a family thing. And the other part about it was then they, to survive, they spent their, you know, what they had for material costs and supplies to make all these quilts for these giveaways that they have at powwows. And they even did some graduations, you know, which they still were able to do those, but the families weren't able to have the giveaways in honor of them. All that got cut short, so it really affected many of the families that just do quilting or small stuff and they sell it to the vendors. It really affected them. And, you know, sad because they had to use their supply money to survive this last year.
Sure. And Melvin, thinking about that, of how many people who are having to pull themselves out of it, that's another side to all of this and a part of this story too. Melvin, you know what? We do got to consider our quilt makers too, and there are many other people who share in this, and you can share your story with us today, 1-800-996-2848. Melvin, good to hear your voice as we start off the week. Also on the line, we got a caller out of Bethel, Alaska. Dawn gave us a ring out of KYUK, listening community. Dawn, thanks for giving us a ring. Go ahead. You're on air.
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's John, J-O-H-N.
Oh, sorry about that, John. Go ahead.
John. Semi, it's good to listen to you guys all the time. I'm a full-time artist, and I've been an artist for many, many years. I had developed this unique design that had a great response, and it was helping out my family and those that I support through my artwork. The Saturday markets that we have in Bethel, Alaska, were also cut off, and then we could not participate at the Alaska Federation of Natives, which is the largest gathering of natives in the state of Alaska, usually held in October. And we're going to be having one this year. Oh, great. That's a good. And I had we had our first Saturday market here in Bethel. It went very well, but there wasn't very many people because they were all attending the graduations. So anyhow, I was forced to develop an interactive dynamic website, a bit against my upbringing, to avoid selfishness and to be humble. You know, I had to literally fight that to advertise myself to the general public, to a wider audience, and I'm glad I did. I have not made a broad advertising of it yet, but it's getting a really good response everywhere in Alaska.
So, and what's been the learning curve on that, John? Have you had to employ somebody or bring somebody in to help you, or did you have to get tech savvy real quick?
I have been working on developing my nerdy techiness for some time now. And I've been having my youngest daughter help out whenever she can, and that helps her with her babies and stuff. So, yeah, this is a new perspective for a lot of Alaska Native artists. And if you were to visit my website, you will get an idea of how to structure it so that your items will be more effective in being seen by others around the world.
And basically, John, we got to go to break here real quick. Give out that website.
The website is atsaq.art, atsaq.art.
All right, thank you for that. We've got to take a pause here. But again, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And I'm also looking for programs maybe people haven't heard about it that are going to help people that we've heard from on our hour today. Go ahead and share those resources with us. You can do it by calling in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. You can also post on Facebook. And our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. But there is still time for you and space for you to join this conversation today. We're live and we are ready for your call. Dial in now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we are talking about small business vendors and entrepreneurs who sell arts and crafts and food at the powwows, community events, flea markets, and they are a part of the Native economy, and the pandemic took a toll on them. And if you're an arts and crafts or food vendor, are you ready to get back into the game? Going back to fairs, flea markets, powwows, different places where you usually vend. Is there opportunity to do this? Give us a ring. There's still time to join our conversation. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Also here, too, out of Seattle, Washington, is Carrie Hurd. She is a district director for the U.S. Small Business Administration, Seattle District. Our pleasure to have her here with us. Carrie, welcome to Native America Calling.
Thanks, Tara. It's an honor to be here today and share some information with your listeners.
Thank you. And so, Carrie, we'd like to give it to you, give the floor to you to just do exactly that. Anything you want to share, opportunities, and of course, you heard Thomas's story coming up. We're going to hear from another person who sells things joining us out of Tama, Iowa. Go ahead, share your thoughts.
Thank you. So it is disheartening to hear stories like Thomas. And unfortunately, he's not alone. This pandemic has been devastating for a lot of micro businesses, and whether they are, food vendors selling at the flea market, it's just been just overwhelming. And SBA has a very powerful menu of programs every day. But during the pandemic, Congress recognized how devastating this pandemic was to small businesses, and they gave us an incredible group of programs to help small businesses, essentially transforming our tiny little agency that very few people knew from a mighty tugboat into an aircraft carrier. And that's how it feels, as, you know, we're very well positioned to help small businesses like in a hurricane. But this was a nationwide disaster. And it was easy to identify the main street businesses in LA, Seattle. But when you start to really dig underneath and find those flea market businesses, the food vendors. That takes a lot of community partners to help us reach them. I believe it was Thomas who said the Navajo Nation didn't necessarily see that side of their economy, but those small businesses are so vital to those families and that overall community. We have some programs, which I wish I were talking to you about 3 weeks ago, because I feel like this would be better suited for your listeners. Today, at 5 p.m., we have a program that's called the Restaurant Revitalization Fund, and it closes for applications. But we have funds still available for those businesses, restaurants, micro-restaurants, food trucks, food vendors, who had $50,000 or less in revenues in 2019. So this particular slice, carve-out of this bigger program, is really perfect for those types of food vendors at the flea markets and farmers markets that are part of our culture, our society. We also have the Paycheck Protection Program, which when President Biden opened it up so that sole proprietors could use their federal tax gross revenues as opposed to their net revenues, allowed our smallest of self-employed individuals to get a little bit more than they would after expenses. Now, some of the challenges with these programs is that for Native American businesses operating on the reservation, they don't always have to file federal taxes by treaty. So that makes it more difficult for us to be able to process those applications, to verify those revenues, and so it takes more time. We were able to help some tribal fishers work through that with the Paycheck Protection Program. So if you are a very small vendor like Thomas, if you have sold your artisan or your art, if you're an artisan who has sold your art and you've used a point-of-sale vendor such as Square, we can potentially use that documentation to substantiate your sales. And we may be able to get you connected to a couple of lenders, very niche lenders, who could maybe help you get some of these funds. We also have the Economic Injury Disaster Loan and the Targeted Idle Advance. And each of these programs has some clear criteria that individual businesses have to meet. But I would encourage you to reach out to your local SBA office to see if you could be eligible for one of those programs. And a lot of these programs are winding down, so there isn't a lot of time for you to be able to do this.
And Carrie, you know, great resources, of course. Is there any, the SBA, your local one, is one place to go, but you also mentioned a deadline at 5 today. Any direct links for that one or keywords people should be looking up as they search for it? Please share those.
Absolutely. So on the restaurant one for the small food vendors, go to sba.gov/restaurants. And that will take you to a page that has some more information and also has the link to the application. You will need your revenue from 2019 and 2020. So have some of those financial documents handy. Aside from our loan programs and our direct payment programs for the COVID, I do want to point out some very valuable resources for the future. SBA helps fund a Native Edge program that the National Center of American Indian Economic Development manages for us and delivers for us. Those are free, just incredible information on how to run a business, business trends, resources that are available. We also have Native Empowerment Workshops. And one of the things that we realize is that we have to work through our community partners. And in doing so, this Native Empowerment Workshop is a Native American-owned business who's actually taken a hobby and turned it into a very successful business. And they will work to help people replicate essentially what they've done. And they're also working with different people to build the capacity of folks out across Indian country to be able to help these small micro businesses.
Wow. And that sounds like something we could, it sounds like something we could focus on for a full hour. Maybe we need to. It's interesting to hear these different resources. And have you ever heard of any of these different opportunities? And you can give us a ring too. Phone lines are open. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Carrie, I appreciate you being here. I got one more vendor to bring in today. We're going to go to Tama, Iowa, not Canada. Maybe I want to go to Canada. That's why I said that earlier. But no, we are going to Tama, Iowa. We have Paula Johnson here with us. She is the small business owner and designer of a Cree woman design. And she is Samson Cree from the Samson Cree First Nation from Musquechis, Canada. Our pleasure to have her here with us today. Paula, welcome.
Thank you for having me today.
And so, Paula, we turn it to you. Tell us your story, what you have had to do, how you have made it through, and, of course, what it is that you are offering to folks. Go ahead, Paula.
Basically, having a small business where I design essential oils from dry medicines such as sweetgrass, sage, cedar, and dry lavender, it's kind of hard for me because I really love going to markets and meeting people, telling them my story, how I came across what I do. And it's just having to adapt to put everything now on social media, like Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, a business page. I had to adapt quickly as I could not travel home to Canada as well. So that really took a toll on myself. Like I really can't, I haven't been able to really see my family due to the border being closed, not being able to fly home. So I've had to quickly adapt. And as a person working from home, like 24/7, and then two little ones that are like doing cyber school, it's been a lot to take on, I guess.
Yeah, that's a lot to take on. And Paula, before we get crunched for time, definitely share where people can connect with you.
I'm on Facebook. You can actually look up my page. It's called A Cree Woman Design by Paula Johnson. You can actually browse my business page. You can send me a message on there. You can add me on Facebook. I've had to really adapt to, I really don't know how to do those kind of networks, but I've had to teach myself fast, especially when I've had not to been going to markets. And that's what I really loved is setting up, meeting other people, being around other small businesses like myself. And it's hard to not have that, what you're familiar with, and to like build those relationships. And a lot of, I've applied for grants and I've actually signed two contracts to larger Canadian companies, and I ship my oils to them from here. So it's kind of been a blessing in disguise, but it's actually been a hurdle for me.
Sure. And Paula, thinking about what you're selling, oils, that has to do with smelling and that sense. And so a lot of people, they smell the oil, then they want to get it. So what have you done to come around that too, of sharing exactly what these products are and for would-be customers? And before, you could just let the nose do the talking. How have you gotten around some of that?
You know, that's the first time I've ever actually been questioned that. And, you know, how I've been thinking about it since you've asked me is just building that relationship of explaining what my business really entails, what oils can do for you, relaxation, for basically anything that the body ailment has. It's just building that kind of basically, I'm telling you my story and this is what it can do for you. Because that right there, like what you just said about having your nose do the talking, that was basically kind of like when I go to markets, that was the thing that brought everybody to me. I was like, oh, you smell so good. And it would draw them to my booth. And having that is actually the biggest thing. I've never thought about it before till you said that to me. And it's just like basically telling people what these oils can do for you, such as like sweetgrass, sage, and cedar, what they can, like such as like smudging, but now you have it in a, like an oil form. It's just having that scent of an actual sweetgrass sprayed or dry cedar or dry sage is right there in a little tiny bottle.
And so, Paula, thinking about things are opening up once again, what does that outlook look like for you?
I'm actually really, really excited to travel. I can't wait to go home back to see my family in Canada, just to build that network again. I've actually been invited to 3 markets during the months of July and August and September. So I'm excited to get back out there again. I'm excited to smile and meet people and just be among other small businesses, because I literally love doing that. And as soon as like the COVID hit, that really took a toll on what I thought to myself, what am I going to do? What do I do? So I did have a small business page, but I started putting more on there. I set up a store on there. I've had people add me on Facebook, just building that relationship because I can't really see them in person. So I've had to just create a fan base based on social media.
Wow. And a lot of things have emerged on social media too, especially in terms of business. And so, Paula, has this time also blessed you with the ability to just maybe figure out your business more, get your words right, figure out where else you want to take things? Has any of that emerged?
Yes, it has. It's been a blessing in disguise when I've signed 2 large contracts. Being able to create like hand sanitizers, especially with COVID, having traditional smelling hand sanitizers such as sweetgrass, sage, and cedar, like your hands smell like the actual medicine. So I'm actually, my oils are carried in certain products, like such as hair products now. It's just building that. I built those relationships just when they found my business page. People sharing my links and pictures of myself. Like I'm just like a one-woman show. So I work from home plus raising 2 little ones, a 5- and 6-year-old. So it's just like doing everything that I can to help my husband, you know, try and make money like I used to. It's just, I had to adapt. And I can honestly say sitting right here right now, I had to adapt quickly, and I still can't believe that my business is still running.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And Paula, any words to, you know, future customers, whether it be in front of your booth or somewhere else, or if they're traveling through a Native Nation and they see a roadside vendor, what's your message to those folks?
Stop, come see us, see what we're about, support us. I know that people say, oh, your product's too expensive, but if you can buy a $200 pair of shoes, you can support an Indigenous business. It's all about supporting one another, having the relationships built, meeting other people from other tribes, because I'm actually from Alberta, Canada, and meeting people here in Tama, Iowa, going out to Michigan, going out to, you know, Wisconsin, meeting those kind of people and building those relationships that my items could be carried in gift stores. It's just creating those relationships to show other businesses what Indigenous people can do. There's much
they
more
can
to
do
us.
A whole lot. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
and real quick, any word to your fellow business folks who have walked this road with you or ones you've never met, just words of encouragement, anything you want to share?
Keep going. Believe in yourself and keep going. Don't ever quit. Because I thought about quitting too when COVID hit. I just had to keep going. I had to put it in myself that I can do this. You know, you just have to keep putting your best, your head high, your best foot forward. You keep a smile on your face and I can do this. It's my business. It's my passion. It's something I love. If I didn't love what I do, then I probably wouldn't have kept going. But I love having a small business. I love creating things with my own hands. Giving that to people is something that I created, something that I love. And I'm very proud to be a small business owner and be in a world full of like other Indigenous vendors. Just seeing that now on social media, like Instagram, what other people can do. It's amazing. It's just like, wow.
Yep, a lot of good stuff. Well, Paula, thank you for sharing your story. We got to wrap things up. Thank you to everybody we heard from, Paula Johnson, Thomas Brady, Dr. Franklin Sage, as well as Carrie Hurd. And you can find links to folks on the program on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. And tomorrow we hope you'll join us for a discussion about cryptocurrency. I'm Tara Gatewood. Thank you for tuning in today. The full week lineup is on our website, so visit there. Sign up for the newsletter if you haven't already. Thanks so much. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Native America Calling is supported by Oregon State University eCampus. As an online student with Oregon State eCampus, you can connect with other tribal communities through OSU's Native American Ina House. The Longhouse is open to all students, no matter where you live, and provides opportunities to participate in events, fellowship, and support. Learn how you can join this vibrant Native community at ecampus.oregonstate.edu/Native America Calling.
Local Indian healthcare provider. Karsakangwafsi Tulu Healthcare.gov Nakakilalu Kukulalui 1-800-318-2596 Unakailuni Sentamin Medicare and Medicaid Service Kunin.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.